Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for joining us today on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and today we're opening up the phone lines for the hour to take questions with our resident expert. Well, I don't know if she's she has
my room's in the back.
Sure, that's right. Mary Wangren has been our guest on several occasions in the past, and wanted to have her back here during the month of April. April is Autism Awareness Month. But, you know, if you are a parent with a child with any sort of neurobiological diagnosis, then you are certainly aware every day. And there are challenges and complications. And Mary Wangren has lived some of that out as a parent with a child diagnosed with Asperger's. And she is now a businesswoman, a wife, support group leader, advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis. She has a degree in momology, as we say, and in continuing ed, as we found out. So there's
never ends.
It never ends. Yeah, and she has worked extensively in scouting, and does a lot of speaking and advocating and support groups, all those kinds of things. So we're going to talk today about autism and related neurobiological diagnosis, and we would love to have you join the conversation. And just to talk about, hey, how is life going for you? And if there's some questions that you have, Mary will do her best to field them, and we'll just have a great conversation together. The phone number is 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to submit a question online, if that's more convenient, use the email. You can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith a show page, and there's a little email tab there. You can submit your question. I'll come right to the studio. Mary, welcome back. Good to
Thank
see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Right. You know, when you were asking people to call or email in, it got me thinking about way back when George, my son, was first diagnosed. And you're so excited to have a diagnosis because there's something that explains their behavior and their characteristics. But in the second breath, you don't want to tell anybody, but you feel alone on an island. So, yes, welcome all those questions or comments or concerns, and let people know they're not alone.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you do. You're always comparing yourself to the perfect world and those perfect families that are all around you. Not true.
Yeah. Well, that way, and so this was 25 years ago for you, right? Because George is 25 now, so which is a whole kind of another issue dealing with an adult child with Asperger's. But so did you know right away?
No, George was an amazing baby. I think back, and you know, if I knew now what I knew, you know, that whole thing. But it wasn't until George was in second and third grade that he started showing characteristics of ADD. But we found that he could not deal with change. He got very upset. It would come out sideways. And first time we got him diagnosed, it was with ADD as well as obsessive compulsive disorder, because he always rubbed his head. And then through the years, as he approached more like sixth grade, and while I had my support group, that's when we had somebody come in. It was a social worker who was talking about Asperger's, and it described George to a T, everything, the non-eye contact, the not reading nonverbal cues, his absolute need for routine, the need to not surprise him. You always had to give him warnings, lots of kind of things like that. And so when he was in seventh grade, that social worker had him and said, Mary, have you ever considered having George diagnosed? And I said, sure, let's do it, because that's the way I am. I was just like, get her done. Yeah. I've got things to do. And that's when I came up with the Asperger's diagnosis. And it was really different, because when George was going through high school then, and something would happen, something would slip up, he'd always let us know. Remember, I wasn't diagnosed until about 5 years after everybody else. I said, you think that's an excuse, George? You know, but he always, you know, reasoned it in his mind. So,
It does make, I guess, raise the question, should he have been, I mean, would you have known, would it have made a difference if you'd known 5 years earlier or 8 years earlier.
You know what? I think it would have made things a lot different. When George would get frustrated, example, when he was like in third or second grade, these kids loved it because they got to wash the tables and do all these things. I mean, nowadays, if you get your kid to wash your table, I don't know what these teachers did, but it got them excited. Yeah. And one day, George, it was a Friday, and the Monday he was supposed to be his week to be this helper. And the teacher said, George, so-and-so is coming back because she's been sick with chicken pox, and so she's going to do it because she missed her time. And George had a complete meltdown, threw his folder down, said unfair. And little things like that, if I would have been aware of it, I think we would all approach things a lot differently. And what's amazing, this past weekend I had the opportunity of talking and speaking and training and stuff for adults in scouting. One of the things that we always say is, the little nuances that we do for kids with invisible diagnoses, the ones that we don't see, that's basically what I think of NBDs. Your kids with Asperger's, autism, ADD, bipolar, Tourette's, all of that. But all those little nuances that we do to make their life better, it works for neurotypical kids too. And so when people say, whoa, that's not fair, or how come you're doing that for them? Well, do it for everybody. Because we all have a little something-something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, which is true, isn't it?
Yes. I mean,
we're all on a continuum someplace.
We are. Yeah. It's just one. The whole thing is we all do, because it allows us to multitask. It allows us to study harder or a harder drive or whatever. But it's when it takes over your life and prevents you from succeeding or accomplishing. That's when things start to go awry and people go, what's going on here? Mm.
You're parenting a child that maybe is one of those invisibles, has one of those diagnoses, whether it's ADHD or it's obsessive compulsive or it's Asperger's, autism. Join us for a conversation. Mary Wangren is my guest today, and our phone number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Mary, you mentioned that your son had a little meltdown at one point, and how do you tell between neurobiological acting out and the child just being a kid?
That's the $100 million question. I think that parents that have kids with invisible diagnosis, we can tell, but sometimes we tell too much. Mm. Does that make sense? There are times where I'd watch George and somebody said to me, Mary, you need to step back and watch the way the other kids are acting, because that's the hardest thing sometimes. Is that hormones? Or is that the diagnosis? Is that a meltdown of a teenager or a meltdown of a child with a diagnosis? And to be honest with it, doesn't matter. You know, you just have to deal with it. Just like when our kids have a meltdown, I was talking about I have my daughter who's 23 now. And Josie's been living out in West Virginia for the last 5 years. That's where she chose to go to school. But now she's coming back here to finish her education. And every time things weren't good, I'd get a phone call, mom, and she was just having a meltdown, crying, and I would try to talk her through it and, off the ledge kind of a thing, and then I wouldn't hear from her for a day, and I'd be texting her fervently, what's going on? Is everything okay? And that's one of the things that as a parent, we talked about this past weekend, parents, when you get those texts from the kids when they're at camp or at the jamboree or wherever, take a deep breath. See if you can just work it through, because the first time, especially parents with invisibles, they get on the phone and they call the adult that's at hand to find out what's going on. And the parent stands there and goes, what are you talking about? I guess it doesn't matter. Deal with it. But it's the method of which you use to deal with it. It's just, be a parent.
But I wonder about the issue of maybe personal safety things. I mean, does a meltdown lead into sort of obsessive behavior or something that's going to maybe cause injury or damage to a child?
Well, it depends on the child and their behavior. Yeah. But I know one thing that we try to do, we talk about this. I talk about this for Sunday school. I talk about this for George at school. I talk about it for other kids. Sometimes they need to physically remove themselves because they may get so angry because they don't need to have all that attention. They don't want people to look at them. They know that what they're doing is not appropriate. And that's why it's sometimes to have a game plan before you even know it's going to start. When you start to feel on a scale from 1 to 5, if you're feeling like a 4, like you're going to pop. George used to text us when he was at a 3, and I would give him things to do. Step away from it, or go into your tent, or leave. You know, we've sometimes found for him just going into the bathroom and go into the stall, shut the door, and think about something. Or we would send him into the social worker. They would keep a jigsaw puzzle for George, and he would go in there and put in 2 pieces because he got out of his mind what he was angry about. He could do this, and then he could walk away and move on. So, yes, it's really important to have a game plan. If your child has a history of having meltdowns, have a strategic plan. If they have a place to go, to somewhere, to an office or to a classroom where somebody is safe for them, if there's a place they can just step out in the hallway. I remember when George was at was camping with his troop, and George, there was too much noise. It was just too intense for him, and he knew he had to step away. So we went around the corner, but he didn't tell anybody where he was. Mm. And when the leaders came to get him, they're like, come on, George, you got to come in the room. You can't sit here. And he goes, but I need to sit here. No, you can't sit here. And it went back and forth until he blew up. And then it becomes words that are like feathers in the wind. You can't get them back.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, another area where we need to dive in a little bit about how do we, as parents and other adults, you know, teachers, you know, Sunday school workers, or you know, how do we be supportive and yet sort of maintain order and not say the right or wrong thing?
One of the things that I think that a lot of people is when you have volunteers like Sunday school, scouting, confirmation, any organization, 4-H, you've got volunteers. And I hate to say it, but what we come with is our own degrees in mammology or dadology. Yeah. And we're good at what we are based on what we are living with. And one of the things I think first and foremost is, and I know at our church when I worked with some kids, there was a family, 5 boys, and the Sunday school had a rough time with them. Because they had their own agenda. They did have some, they do have invisibles. And first and foremost, people have to understand these kids listen different. And that was one of the frustrating things because everybody thinks if all eyes up on front at the teacher, they know everybody's focused. These kids don't focus that way. They focus with a pencil or a crayon on their hand and doodling, or they focus when they have these little toys or even squishy things. You'll see in some of the schools they put Velcro underneath the students' desks so that they can play with this Velcro underneath. It's tactile. And they, first and foremost, they listen different. And second of all, it's got to be understood is their speed and accuracy on doing things may not be like a neurotypical student. If they don't finish, if you're building a birdhouse and you have to move on to the station and they don't finish that birdhouse, they can't move on. That's true with games. That's true with anything. What happens if you give them the extra 10 minutes? Maybe another adult could stay and be there with them until they complete them and take to the next station or whatever. Those are some of the things that, again, when you don't live with a child with an invisible, you may not get some of those nuances. And I would sit there and I'd have the volunteers say, look, come on, everybody who's looking at me, those that are looking at me, oh, you're doing such a great job. And it's like, okay, those that aren't, you're a bunch of toads sitting on a rock.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. Yeah.
Talking with Mary Wangren today. Mary is a businesswoman, a wife, support group leader, and advocate on behalf of families of children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis, as she has 2 adult children, a 23-year-old, 25-year-old son, George, has a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and characteristics of ADD and OCD, and we're going to talk more about it today. And we welcome you to join the conversation. Mary speaks frequently to groups of various kinds, just talking about how we can be more understanding and just giving some encouragement for moms and dads and other adults interacting with kids that have a diagnosis, as she calls them, invisibles, and many times they are. Join us for the conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we'll continue just a moment with Mary Wangren. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We've connected with Mary Wangren today. Mary has her degree in mammology, but she also works as an educator and a teacher, trainer, and an advocate on behalf of those that have neurobiological diagnosis. She writes a blog called Invisible 411, and often, as she said, that these kids are invisible. They have all got something, and we may not be aware of it. And we may not be responding properly. So if you're a parent with someone with autism or Asperger's or maybe it's ADD or something else, you want to join the conversation, we'd love to have you call at 877-933-2484, April Autism Awareness Month. Mary, among other things, a businesswoman, a wife support group leader, and been doing a little remodeling at the house. And I understand with a 25-year-old adult son with Asperger's syndrome, doing a remodeling project is kind of fun.
It opens a whole new can of worms. Oh, my gosh. It's interesting because we redid. It seems like we started a year ago and we're still in the midst of it. But we redid our kitchen. And that in and of itself was very difficult, especially when you take your countertop and you're waiting for the new one. But one of the things is as we started moving upstairs, we've been painting all the walls and we're getting new carpet. And George stood in his doorway because we've been pulling up the carpet ourselves. And I've been bleaching it and we've been painting it because I have to admit we have two wiener dogs. And their bladders are very small. Yeah. But anyway, no excuse. And so So we're doing all this, and George one day stood in his bedroom in his door frame, and his hand was on each side, and he said, "Mother, this remodeling, it's not going to happen in my room." And I tried to explain to him about the new carpet and how it's going to smell so good, and we're going to, you know. And he's and I said, "And I really would love to redo your room. I want to paint it." "No, you're not. I like this green. I think this green is appropriate for me, and we'll just keep adding things." And when I say adding things, he has books, and I had to convince him to allow me to take books because we had to move this armoire. And so we got him, and I strategically put him in boxes, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And when we were cleaning out his desk, because he has all these pens and pencils, I was happy when we were done with the books because he was exhausted because he wanted the classics. And the classics is like anime. No, I shouldn't say that. But he has all these anime books and all these books, and he wanted all the classics. And I said, fine. And so we got everything going. And when he left, I was happy because I could clean his desk without him around. And about 20 minutes later, I'm happy. I'm throwing these pencils that are mechanical with no eraser and no lead. And he stands in the doorway, and he looks at me. And I stopped, and I took – oh, my – I just sucked in my air because I knew – I thought we were going to have a match. Now, this was going to be a verbal for the neighbors. You know what I mean? "Mother, didn't I tell you not to touch the pens and the pencils?" And I said, "Yes, but George, these are really gross." And he goes, "Not to me, they're not." So then my husband came to his rescue.
Wait, and he was going to go his rescue?
Yes, yes. He started going, I know, two against me. I had to call the dogs in. "Pee on the carpet," I said. "Be with me." No, I'm just kidding. But Charles came in, he started going through in the garbage, and so I started putting him in a box, and everything was fine, and George didn't yell and have a meltdown, but then I explained to him, "Dad recovered those that you thought were important." And but change, it's so difficult, and you don't even think that anything around them, something like painting your room, or but he doesn't want to deal with the change. Smell, he doesn't like smells because they're very intense to him. And he lets you know. When we did pull everything out of his room, his bed, we moved to the other side while we painted that side of the floor. He had to sleep in the basement because it was on the wrong side of the bedroom and he didn't have his nightstand.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you laugh, but that's when you say, could you not have Asperger's for 10 minutes?
Well, and you said you were having the conversation, yes, but that probably doesn't work. With someone with this diagnosis, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't because I was touching his stuff and I was doing what I wanted with his stuff because he doesn't deal with his stuff. Yeah. But so we work through it.
And has that changed? Stuff becomes more meaningful over the years. So I mean, does the fight potentially get bigger, or does it change?
It does. It changes. There are times where we can be It depends on the time of day, too. I mean, when he's tired, you don't take the battle. You just, you know. But they do become different, whereas he could not express himself as much when he was younger. And I think that's why the meltdowns happen like they do, the screaming or the kicking or the, you know, when these kids get violent at times or just they vocal. George can express himself a lot more. And I think that makes it easier. But then sometimes when you try to express it and he's done, he doesn't want to hear what you have to say. And that's very difficult, too.
That you have to know when the conversation's over.
Right.
So on his emotional level.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of times it gets stuck in his head that he keeps – I sometimes tell him, I ask him, George, who's the mom? Because you're doing the lecturing now because it just keeps coming back over and over. But I want you to know mother. And it's kind of interesting. Yeah. So I tell him to write it down so I'll never forget.
Yeah. And does he do that?
Yes, he does. Okay. Yeah, writing down for any of these kids, their heads get stuck. That's why they can't move on to things emotionally sometimes. And you need to just hand a piece of paper and a pencil or a crayon. And they can – George used to do that. We would do things like we had to go to a city council meeting, and George was more caught up in the way the boys were sitting in chairs that he thought was inappropriate than he was on the city council meeting. And so I handed him a piece of paper and pencil. I said, write down everything that's bugging you, and you and I will discuss this. And within, I would say, about 7 minutes after him writing, he completely forgot about it and got engrossed in what was going on in the city council meeting. So they need to get unlocked.
What would be a way to unlock, say, a five-year-old or a seven-year-old when they're maybe not – they're not sitting down writing down like
right.
a 25-year-old.
Right. Well, a lot of times for those kids to get unlocked, it could be a book. It can be music. It can be even watching a video. Something that allows them to basically get off their mind. A lot of times it's a matter of just playing with Legos or, you know, Play-Doh, something like that. Because what you need to do is maybe they can express it with pictures, or they can express it with building something, and they can sometimes just do that and share with you what they're doing.
Talking with Mary Wangren today, Mary's businesswoman, wife, support group leader, and advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis. We're going to talk a little bit about her blog. She's been writing lately called Invisible 411 about those, you know, kids around us that many times are invisible but have challenges in their lives, and it creates some challenges for the parents. Maybe you're one of those parents. You want to join the conversation? It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Mary Wangren has her degree in biology from St. Olaf College, as well as a degree in momology, and provides education seminars to teach and train special parents of special kids. And we'll hear more with Mary coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, we'll get into foods, medications, a bit, some of those things. How do churches be more maybe sensitive and aware, and some of the challenges that, you know, schools are facing, all those things coming up in the moment ahead. And you're welcome, again, to join the conversation at 877-933-2484. This is Connecting Faith. We've connected with Mary Wangren today. She's in studio. Mary's been our guest on several occasions in the past, and I always love the opportunity to talk with her. As she
so
has,
sweet.
Well, that's yeah.
I'll pay you later.
That's right. I read it just like you wrote it up for me, so
thank
I hope you.
You
appreciate that.
Such a good man.
Mary's a businesswoman, a wife, a support group leader, an advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis. And she's been a volunteer at her church and in scouting, and the mother of two children. Her oldest son, George, 25 now, has a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. And Josie, her daughter, 23 years old, also has, you know, some on that. I guess, like you say, Mary, we all have a little something.
Yes. You
know, it doesn't really matter where it is, but oftentimes those kids can be invisible diagnoses, but create a lot of challenges for parents. We're talking about it today, and you're welcome to join with us for the phone call, or if you want to drop a note via email, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email tab there. You can submit your question or or join us for the story. We want to talk, though, about getting that diagnosis, having your child diagnosed at some point along the way, that it changes how you sort of look at life, right? You're not going to be celebrating in the same way, and there's going to be times of mourning as well. So talk about
that. That's one of the things what does it take for you to notice? Parents are noticing earlier and earlier. And so I hear about, yesterday we were contacted by a parent whose son they want to have join Cub Scouts, and he already has an IEP, and the young man hasn't even gone to kindergarten yet. An IEP is an individual education plan. And so so because of that, it's either the parents will notice it, teachers usually are the ones who will notice it, pediatricians will notice it, but who do you go to first and foremost? Well, if you don't know what to do, the first person is to turn to your pediatrician or to your family practice physician, and they are going to recommend. They're going to like when George, when we first speculated, we talked to the school, we talked to his pediatrician, and his pediatrician wanted us to first get a diagnosis from a mental health provider. And the mental health providers, once you see a pediatric therapist or whatever, they know in the direction to go. A lot of times the schools will pay for it. It depends on the time of year that it falls into. But there's a lot of kids getting tested, and sometimes it can be very difficult. It's very overwhelming for the parents. I'll never forget after George's diagnosis through the school, we came to a meeting, and there were like 10 adults. There was teachers and professionals and the principal, and it was he and I at the head of the table, and talk about feeling like you're ganged up on, So it's very important. If you feel that there's something, ask. Also, going online is you can – characteristics of Asperger's, ADD, you can even Google invisibles or neurobiological diagnosis, and a lot of the stuff will come up. Mayo Clinic has some wonderful resources. I'm trying to think. There's all kinds of different societies too. There's the Autism Society. There's just CHAAD, which is Children and Adults with ADD, and that's a national organization. So there'll be even chapters for that in different areas of the country too. So there's lots of things going on.
You know, we were just chatting during the break that you end up celebrating little things that maybe parents of other children wouldn't necessarily celebrate, but you also mourn things like, there's not going to be a homecoming king or queen, with a child with one of these diagnoses.
Exactly. That's one of the hardest things is I remember my nephew who was playing basketball at a very early age, and George was very clumsy. Josie learned to ride a bike when she was 3 years old, one of those little tiny ones that started in the basement, and then she went outside and, she was flying. George didn't learn to ride a bike till he was 4 years old, fourth grade, excuse me. So there's a clumsiness. They don't have the dexterity, and they sometimes don't even have the physical, like the balance piece, which means they may not be the jock. They could be the jock. Trust me. I mean, you've got somebody like one person that I talk in particular about is Michael Phelps. I talk about him. A lot of people don't realize he had a really rough start when he was a kid. His teachers would tell his parents, his mom, that he was not going to amount to anything, that even when he was in third and fourth grade, he was not going to amount to anything. They said, what you see right now is as far as it's going to get. And he got in the swimming pool. And he showed a skill, and he had a coach that even at one point, his coach said, Michael, I've taught you as much as I can teach you. It's time for us to find you somebody that's better than me. And Michael was like, no way. And they basically had to get coaching for the coach. And look at the success this man is. And that's when you ask yourself, because a lot of people don't realize these kids are so smart and they are so gifted. And you wonder, is it the perseverance because of them having to live with the invisible, or is it the invisible and the hyper focus that tends to happen with a lot of these kids that leads them on to the success of these occupations, whether it be sports? I mean, you look at, they claim Walt Disney had Asperger's. They look at people, Cher, and you look at Greg Louganis for swimming, and you look at Mozart and Beethoven, Einstein. They say, and now Einstein says it's because he studies longer. That's a quote of his. But it's amazing.
Which brings up,
I guess, all excited.
Well, you should. I mean, and we celebrate, you know, those stories.
Right, but there are things that are sad. There are things where you may not get your child. Your child may not be the one to go to homecoming or to go to prom. They tend to not have very many friends because of their quirkiness. The sad thing about kids with invisibles, they don't get along necessarily with their peer group because they are usually 2 to 4 years maturely behind their peers. So you've got a boy that's, you know, third and fourth grade where these kids start to identify the groups that they're in. Well, they're not going to be included. You know, we see this in scouting when they get into sixth and seventh grade. They don't identify with their peers. The older kids, they look at them as they're younger. It doesn't matter if they've got a invisible. If they deal with kids that are younger than them, they think they're cool because these kids with invisibles are older. They don't notice that they're any different. You know, it's when they get one-on-one with their peers sometimes or, you know, they don't think like anybody does at their age when they're, you know, they're not thinking about girls or sports. They're still thinking about Legos and video games. And
it's I know you've been involved in scouting for a long time. In fact, George got his Eagle Scout degree,
yes,
which is a certificate pretty significant.
Yes.
So is something like that or a 4-H or those kinds of things good?
They are terrific.
Programs for?
Because for Boy Scouts, they're in the game of character building. They want to build strong citizens. Something like Boy Scouts, something like 4-H, other youth organizations, they're really good because what it is one, they're very structured. Plus, it gives these kids an opportunity to shine in areas that maybe they would never get that opportunity. And they get to discover things that they just normally wouldn't discover. And, yes, it's amazing because there are a lot of kids with invisibles that are in scouting. And it's really incredible to see these kids. I had an opportunity of speaking at an Eagle Court of Honor for a young man. And this young man is in college. He is so successful. He is in Nebraska's marching band. He is so talented. But it was funny because I had him in all my religious emblem classes. It's a way to study your faith through an additional method rather than just Sunday school confirmation. And I had him from first grade on. Okay, so now he's in high school, and it's called God and Life, and it's for 9th through 12th grade. And it talks about how God chooses unlikely candidates. And we all know when kids start getting into high school, they get quieter, and they don't necessarily want to participate. And so one day about after the third class, I pulled him over, and I said, "Braden, why aren't you talking?" Because I always look to Braden to talk, and he goes, "Well, Mrs. Wonger, and I take my medication before I come to class." And I said, "Don't.
Yeah.
I need you to talk," because I loved his mind. I love his mind. And it's kind of funny because I asked him if I could share that. But it's incredible because these kids think outside the box.
So what kinds of, they're gifted, they are smart. What kinds of work opportunities are there? I mean, are there fields that, you know, I mean, your son's working, I think, some of the time, right?
Right. But, he's working. He's working part time. He's at Cub. He's a assistant customer service manager. So we're really excited about that for him. He advocates for himself. He shares with his diagnosis. He doesn't expect anybody to understand. So he talks about if he needs to. But he's also going to school. He's going after a business degree. God gifted him with an incredible voice, and he thought he was going to, you know, go into music. Mm. And I kept saying to him, "But is that going to pay the bills?"
Yeah, that momology thing again.
Yeah, there's that getting in my way, and I probably stifled an amazing talent. But but these kids are what's really amazing is a lot of the colleges. There's a lot of colleges here in Minnesota. Augsburg College has a program just for kids with autism. And they get the kids. They understand the structure. They understand the need to help them develop the classes and advocate and all that stuff. There's a lot of schools that are getting more and more prevalent that are focusing on this stuff. These kids are amazing. A lot of times they're into sciences or into math, computer, engineering. It's funny when I talk a lot and I'll talk about engineers, I'll have dads that'll be like, "I was diagnosed when my son was, and I'm an engineer." And the reason is because engineers, A plus B plus C, they know what the outcome is, and that's the way these kids pretty much function. But it's really interesting. When these kids are given the abilities and the the different skills to be able to work in a neurotypical world and to advocate. And it's funny because you see when they're 17, 18, how they come inside themselves and a new personality in this young person is just blossoming, and they can do anything they want to do. It's amazing because you hear about things that what people do and who they are, and if they have a love for something, go for it.
Good. You talked about some universities setting up special programs. They get the kids. Do schools in general get the kids? You think? I mean, you've been working in the education system as well. Are you overall pleased with progress there?
No.
Okay.
I'm not. And it's funny because we hear more and more stories. It's still the same thing. Teachers have a lot of kids, and you and I both know there's a limited amount of time, and sometimes it's easier to work with the kids who are working with you.
Yeah.
And having that one child can be very difficult. And hopefully there's tools and there's areas in the school where – and a lot of schools, I would say, have these people that are specialists. A lot of times people find private schools are really effective because they're smaller classes. But then I've had people say to me, well, Mary, when it comes time to going to high school, are we getting the same opportunities in a private as we would as a public? The public has maybe more funding. It all depends on your child and what your child's capable. I always say, look and see what the schools have to offer. My husband way in the beginning, we're talking elementary, my husband would say to me, don't tell the teachers, see if they can see it and find out. Well, the honeymoon ends in a matter of 2 months, and then everything's hitting the walls. So you need to be advocating and talk to the schools and find out what they have for kids like this. Because some private, some parochial, some public, it all depends. We were fortunate. We changed school districts. We went to a school district that got the kids more, had programs that I feel that the old school district didn't.
Good. Mary Wangren with us today. Our phone lines are open at 877-933-2484. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about kids that have been diagnosed with autism or Asperger's or other neurobiological diagnoses. Mary is an advocate, support group leader, educator in this area. And in just a moment, we're going to talk a little bit about, what do parents do for breaks, if they're in the middle of this, and get into a bit about diet, medication, all those kinds of things coming up as we have another segment with Mary. And you're welcome to join us with your phone calls at 877-933-2484. Glad to have you listening in today on Connecting Faith as we connect with Mary Wangren and talk a little bit about autism and Asperger's and any number of those diagnoses. They come under the NBDs, the neurobiological diagnosis, and as Mary said, they're often invisible. You're maybe a parent or have experienced it maybe as a volunteer in your church, or you're a teacher and they're the challenges. Smart kids, gifted kids, but a challenge. I'm wondering, Mary, anything new or things that you've discovered in terms of what's happening in medication or food, those things? I mean, that always catches our attention. Are there some things that we can do to minimize maybe outbursts or just help the kids be all they can be?
Right. One of the things that a lot of people, which is I think terrific for even neurotypical kids, is, cutting down the sugar, eating healthy, having a good night's sleep, having a routine. Sometimes these kids, they can't shut their brains off. And so going to bed, having, a warm bath, reading a book, lights low, some of that is really important. We discovered for us, George would be up all night. We had a new puppy. We had a golden retriever, and we discovered George would be up every night with this dog, and it's because he couldn't sleep. And for him, it was recommended to have a medication. It's a non-addictive sleeping medication that used to be an antidepressant. It's trazodone, and And they found out it made the patient sleep. That's a way to control somebody, yeah. Right? But so for us, that works well. Medication works well in our family. I don't necessarily advocate it. A lot of times people will do it through the diet. You know, you will have the people who eliminate the reds, the tomato sauces and all that. There are people who are advocates using the different diets of the flour and it's up to the individual yeah. families. You know what I mean? Eating healthy is huge. Not just doing a Pop-Tart, you know, all day, every treat. That's up to the family. And there's a lot of stuff online to read about, you know, food and allergies and all that kind of stuff.
It made me wonder, as you're talking about, you know, kind of getting into a routine, a bedtime routine, has screen been an issue for
you? Screen is a big issue for kids.
Yeah.
Because they can't, and that usually with these kids, as opposed to even the neurotypical kids, it's trying to getting them calmed down. You know, when they're sitting there playing with their thumbs and with stuff that is, you know, Bang Bang or, you know, Mario Brothers and carts and all that, it's hard to come down from it. So cutting off screen time at an early, you know, in an early evening. And utilizing sometimes screen time. It's funny. Squirrel, I'm going off on a different topic. But sometimes you find that these kids are not motivated. Kids with invisibles may not be motivated the same way a neurotypical child would be. Some kids are motivated by money. A lot of times if money isn't important to an individual, but computer time or, you know, game time or whatever. And it's funny because a lot of people that you talk to end up using that kind of methodology to, you know, earn screen time. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's all very, very important.
You talked about, you know, George being up all night. That's one of the challenges, isn't it? Parents are getting tired because their kids are, you know, taking a lot of attention. So what's the encouragement? Where do parents go for breaks? Is there anything in place for that?
Well, that's interesting. A lot of people, depending on what they need for their children, there are people who have paras, which is or personal aides that come in and they go and they befriend or they take them out on outings and things like that, giving the parents some off time because it is exhausting. Sometimes you can't wait for them to go to bed because that's your private time. A lot of times, if you're fortunate, you live in an area where there's grandparents, and that can maybe ease some of the burden a little bit. That's really important. It's even friends. We used to have it where I would take a friend on my day off. I would take her kids, and then on her day off, she would take my kids. And it was a good playtime, play group. She got our kids. It's finding where the friends are. It's important to, especially when these kids are younger, they may not have friends, so you establish play groups or you have play time. And it's important to understand that they may not run the length of time maybe other play groups are. A lot of times these kids may do that social playing where you play by yourself but you talk to each other, and that's great. But understanding what is game for those play times and what's not is really important. And sometimes they don't always work out. So mom better or dad better be nearby to either you escape or having the friends have to leave, you know.
So they don't necessarily have to interact, but probably just being there together.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And there are play groups too. I mean, if you are seeking, you know, if you have professionals, if families are seeking therapy, which I think is awesome, even for the parents, because sometimes you need to just talk to somebody who gets it or that can give you ideas. They're going to talk about different, because there's different organizations out there that do have play groups. They also have SIB groups where siblings can get together and find out, because, you know, it's kind of lonely when you think about it. Last night we were just talking about the movie The Accountant. Yeah. And in there, this accountant, as just to tell the listening audience, he has a high functioning autism, but you see his childhood and you see how the neurotypical sibling is sitting there while he's having a meltdown or he's, you know, reacting, but you don't. And kids can feel that way. I know my daughter at times felt like, you know, we're giving all our attention to George. And so sometimes it's really important to look out for those kids as much as yourself. And even if grandma and grandpa could take the child, the child with the diagnosis, and then you're neurotypical and you escape and go even to McDonald's and do, you know, because, lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be something. Yeah. Let's take a quick call here.
We've got
a couple of minutes left. Judy calling from Minneapolis. Judy, on and Mary, go ahead.
Hi, Judy.
Hey, I have a question. Thank you for taking my call. I feel like God just led me to this program today. My son is 16, just turned 16. He's always been different and struggled. He got kicked out of kindergarten because the teacher couldn't deal with him. And we homeschooled him, and then he went back to private school at fourth grade and just struggled getting along with his peers. And once he hit eighth grade, I think he felt so different that he wanted to end it all.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I give you a big hug across the phone.
Thank you. I took him to a public school, and he was so afraid because there's so many things there, so many people compared to the private school.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested him and said he was autistic. But he started seeing a therapist and a psychiatrist because we found out he was cutting himself and wanted to kill himself because he feels so out of touch with his peers. And he has decided to be selective mutism, mm-hmm. where he doesn't talk to anybody.
Judy, I don't want to, you know, jump in on your story, but we only literally have 2 minutes left. So, Mary, is there anything you can offer, just maybe about
offline, if we could get Judy's phone number,
sure.
I think that would be helpful. Judy, what's happening is he's controlling his world, and it's probably where that mutism is happening. I think I hope he's continuing to go to a therapist. I think it would be important if you also went with him or saw somebody as well. He needs to get in with some social group, somebody who's going to get him, even one-on-one. And he sounds like he's very intelligent, but he wants to control his world. And I would love to talk with you offline, have you go on and talk and get some connection with you, because there's a couple opportunities I think that are out there that we can maybe get him hooked up with. I feel your pain. I heard it in your voice. What you're going through, it's going to get better. This 16 is tough. You're dealing with hormones. You're dealing with a young man who understands that he's different, and you know he's different, but he's got to understand that different is good. And I've got some ideas for you if you don't mind, because I don't want to forget about you after we're done.
Judy, thank you for your
thanks for calling,
call.
Though.
Sure, appreciate it. Mary, you've been writing, doing some blogging at Invisible411. Just say a
right.
bit about that.
Oh, what it is I keep talking about this book. It's called If You Could Not Have Asperger's for 10 Minutes. And I have all these different stories about George. There's funny and there's sad and stuff. But it's funny, it's things will happen where I will go through a holiday and we'll go through different times, and I'll think about, you know, George when he was little and what we experienced and how we deal with it now. And they're funny stories, since we've been remodeling, I haven't, so I'm going to get back into it.
But so look for that, you can search for Invisible 411.
Right.
And lots of resources available, as you said. You know, internet's got a lot of great things you can find, and you can make a connection with us too here, and we'll get you connected with Mary so you can find some help and some hope in this area. Mary Wangren, businesswoman, wife, support group leader, and advocate.
Thank you.
Always good to see you, Mary. Thanks so
Thank
much for
you.
Coming
Thanks
by.
Thanks for having me. And just remember, you're not alone.
Yeah. Hey, if you missed part of today's program, I want to pass it on to a friend. We post the interviews on our show page at myfaithradio.com. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can hear the interview later. Thanks. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player.
And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.